I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a good week so far. So this week on the podcast is a special one. It's currently Saturday night in the UK when I'm recording this, and I decided to get Justin Jay on the podcast. Justin, we've kind of gone through our careers together, really starting off at Dirty Bird. He started his record label Fantastic Voyage. I started mine. We kind of both went our different ways from Dirty Bird, and here we are having this conversation now. And it was a really good conversation, 2.5 hours of me talking to Justin about his process and him talking to me about my process. It was a very two-way conversation. It was a beautiful conversation. I absolutely loved it. He's just also brought out a new record called Rumours. And it's an amazing record, very eclectic, and it's just amazing. So listen to the podcast and then go check it out. Before we start, if you haven't subscribed, hit subscribe. I'd absolutely love it if you could. And yeah, without further ado, Justin Jay, and we're live, baby. How's it going?
Will Clark, dude. I am stoked to be here, man. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming on, man. It's been a very long time. I'm trying to think the last time I actually saw you. And I'm thinking it was Dirty Bird Camp Out.
You know, that could have been. I think the last time we kicked it properly was when I was in Detroit and we went out for ramen together.
Yeah, I do remember that. Where were you playing? Grasshopper.
I played at the Grasshopper, yeah. And I was like, "Well, yo, come hop on and play some tunes." And we went back to back for a little bit.
Was Josh Butler there as well, or was it just you and I?
I think it was just you and me. Yeah.
And then
it was tight though. Yeah. I loved that you were down for the impromptu cameo.
Always. Well, you know how it is. Like, it's easy being a DJ nowadays. You just carry around a USB stick. And my earplugs are always in my USB stick, or my USB stick's always in my earplugs pouch. So just got to roll with it, right?
Yes, dude. Yes, exactly. That is 100% the move. And I relate, like, being in LA when things were normal. Yeah. You know, I pretty much like, because I loved going out for music stuff, and you know, even when I'm not DJing and just going for fun and hearing the good music or seeing friends play, and just all the nights where I'd be, like, you know, I do have my USB.
Are you that annoying DJ that always turns up and wants to go back to back with everyone?
It's like, I do want to go back to back, but I'm so bashful about being pushy. Like, there are times where I'll be like in this mode of like existential conflict between this desire to want to be like, yo, dude, I'm down to play a track versus me being like wanting to be polite and not be overbearing.
Oh my God. I got the funniest story about Holy Ship with that. I can't mention any names because I don't want to throw them under the bus, but I was talking to all I say is that they're a duo. They were on Holy Ship. I was talking to one of them and they were like, oh, it sucks that no one's doing back-to-backs anymore. Because like Holy Ship was known initially that everyone would just jump on everyone's sets and it would just be a big party. And I was like, yeah, I know. No, it's like feels like everyone's just like not doing it. Anyway, they jumped on the decks and then I was like, mate, want me to play a tune? And he was like, nah, dude, it's our first set on the ship. We've got a set planned out. And I'm like, what? Like, you're the reason why. You're the reason why we're not doing back-to-backs.
Oh, man. Oh, dude, respect for being able to ask. See, like, I'm like, you know, I'm like the coach you got to tap me in. I don't have the confidence to ask. I guess, like, there might be some exceptions. And they just normally don't go well.
I would never ask. I would have never have asked him or the person if we hadn't had that conversation beforehand.
Dude, like at that point, come on. But yeah, dude, it is. I don't know, man. There's something really. It is actually a great feeling when someone else is DJing. Like I'm thinking about maybe like. I feel like this would happen at like Space, like Dirty Bird, like at, you know, 1 p.m. or like 10 a.m. and, you know, just like hanging in there being like, please tap me in, coach. Just one track, come on. And then when, you know, and then this is like the image I have in my head would be like, he's DJing. He turns around.
He just points at you, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, dude, dreams do come true. I'm not going to let you play the track you've been dreaming of, and then everyone hates it.
What's been your favorite back-to-back set?
Okay, I actually have one that just came to mind. Dirty Bird Campout, the most recent one, Renegade set with two of my close friends who are in my band, homies from high school. These guys, Danny Goliger and Sam Von Horn. And it was a very defining set. It was like this Renegade set that it was like the last performance of the weekend type of thing. Like, you know, there was like one Renegade stage still trying to get after it. And we just played the craziest set I'd ever played. And it really kind of changed the way I thought about DJing, which is crazy.
Like really? How so?
Well, it took it to, you know, I think like even at Dirty Bird Campout, I started like exploring this intersection of like playing cheesy pop music and like really weird experimental shit.
I
remember like that weekend at Campout, I played like, I was playing like a lot of 160 BPM juke and like crazy shit. And also I played like Spice Girls in the same performance. But there was, when you do stuff like that, it's hit or miss. And I think as a DJ, I don't know, there's times where you can do that and it can feel like you're out of the flow and you're kind of grasping for straws and just playing on shuffle. But there was something about what happened that evening that felt really amazing. And yeah, like Sam, my homie, is really into Aphex Twin. And so he was playing like a lot of like, you know, drum and bass speed, IDM, you know, just insane stuff. And then Danny Goliger would play like Outkast. And then like, And Danny's also down with the really crazy hip shit too. So it's just like, I think it was a pretty beautiful moment because it was like this culmination of a lot of stuff that I was interested in. And then also doing it with, you know, Sam was the dude I would DJ back to back with in high school. He was like the cool popular guy who secretly liked techno.
Yeah.
And I was the guy who was not super cool, but I had but I had decks. So he was down to DJ with me.
Yeah.
But we had similar tastes. And then Danny and Sam were close friends in high school, and they DJed together as well. So, like, you know, it was like a great, like, full circle moment at Dirty Bird Camp Out, which is like always a defining weekend. Yeah, man. How about you? Favorite B2B?
It's really hard because I actually don't like doing back to backs. I'm. it's really not my thing. But like,
Be honest.
Yeah,
be
no, honest. I think for me, it's like, it's not, I like a DJ set to really flow and to like, I want to give the crowd the best time ever. And I don't always think back-to-backs are, because I always think it's the DJs. And I don't think it's necessarily purposely done, but I think the DJs are kind of fighting against each other, where it's like, oh, you play this record, then I've got in my head what I'm going to play next, but then you play something else, then I've got to find something else that works with that. And I love that to a certain extent, but I feel that sometimes it's just, or a lot of the time, it's just very, very hard to kind of get a very good setup. It's always fun. When you're playing with somebody, it's always so much fun. Yeah. But my favorite back-to-back set, funny enough, was at Dirty Bird Camp Out. It was me and Kill Frenzy. And we played.
That's awesome.
It was just kind of like, it was just like perfect. There was like no, Kill did like, he like made an intro track. It was just like named all of the like Dirty Bird guys with no panties on. And it was just yes. like, it was just the most perfect start to the set. And we went in, we were playing like hard. And the crowd were just in it and they were just ready for it. And that's the thing that I find that back to backs, a lot of the time, the crowd don't know what to expect and the DJs don't know what to expect. When they come off well, it's like the best feeling because it's you and your mate doing it. But when they don't, it's like the worst feeling.
Yeah. You know, and that's interesting because that, in the context of like a proper performance, you know, yeah. where it's like big stage expectations, that can be tough, you know, in terms of really being on the same page with the person you're playing with. And yeah, like for those types of moments to come through, that's pretty epic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I hear you in terms of that flow, you know, I think it's interesting because I think context is so crucial. Like, totally. The bigger the stage, I feel like the less ADD it feels like you can be.
Yeah.
It feels like you need to be more intentional if you're going to switch around different corners of music. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting because I haven't done that many, like, back-to-backs in those types of contexts because we don't get that many opportunities. Yeah. But I have had a couple of great ones. I think the keys to like a good back to back. Well, I don't know, man. It's weird. Like, I had a really interesting one that I thought the person was going to hate it, and the person actually didn't mind it.
What was this?
Sibasan.
Okay.
We played back to back at a festival in Louisiana, in New Orleans. It's like the big rave festival. Yeah. I forget what it's called, but
is that Ooby Dooby one?
No, that's in Texas, I think.
That's but the worst it's
like
name that. Ever.
It's got like a similar sort of name. I just can't even remember right now. But dude, this is what was so funny. This is like right as I was about to release my first like singer songwriter album.
Okay.
And so I bought like my like microphone and like my like Daft Punk style vocal effects. And, you know, Sheba starts out playing like, you know, house bangers. Yeah. Crowd is loving it. I play a couple. And then I ask him mid-set, I was like, hey, dude, can I hop on the mic and start singing? and it went from, we played probably like, you know, 30, 40 minutes of him playing a banger and then me playing like a song where I'm singing and it's kind of chill.
And I love that.
Like, and I was like, oh my God. And you know, dude, Sheba-san, like, he is a reserved person, especially, you know, if he's meeting someone new. And so I was like, he hates this. He's never going to talk to me again. But I think he enjoyed it for some reason. Like, I was so surprised.
I think a lot of people think with Sheba, like, that he's kind of like just into making bangers and playing bangers and stuff like that. And I think realistically, he's this insane musician that no one really knows how good he actually is. Like, I was talking to him the other day, and all he's done the whole lockdown was play the piano and play the trumpet. Like, he plays the trumpet. Yeah. And there's like a trumpet shop near in Bristol, like about 40 minutes away from me. And I don't know how it came up, but he was like, dude, this is in Bristol. I was like, yeah, I know. I like go past it all the time. He's like, dude, this is like the best trumpet shop in the world. And I'm like, this is fucking wild. Like, I didn't know you. But then you go back. I know he doesn't like talking about it and probably he's going to kill me, but he used to be one of the biggest hip hop DJs in France, or he was the biggest hip hop DJ in France.
Right. Crazy. So, you've pierced the shell of Sheba-san more so than I have, but there was like a moment where it's like, cause he's very quiet.
Yeah.
At least like for someone who,
yeah,
like me, I guess. And, you know, get that moment where he's like, that's like me being like, dude, that was the best thing ever. Like, the communication is, it's hilarious.
Cause his English wasn't the best before he moved to America full time. His English wasn't the best as well. So the communication was always like one word answers and like facial expressions.
Yeah. But it's like everything, you know, every little gesture
is a win.
Kindness is a win. Dude, here's a question for you.
Hit me with it.
I have an answer for this that came to mind. What was the biggest like high stakes DJ set that you gave the least amount of fucks? Like, and just sort of like, this could be a disaster, but I don't even fucking care. Does anything come to mind?
I think there's been a few, but Coachella when I did the Doolab.
No way.
And it wasn't because I didn't care. It was when me and MK did back to back at Doolab, and I'd played Doolab the year before and was like literally shit in my pants walking on stage, because it was my first time playing Doolab. I didn't know what to expect, like didn't have a clue, and was like, it was amazing. It was like such a great feeling. So going on to the stage a second time with MK, first of all, the funniest thing is, because I'm short and he's so tall,
he's so tall,
we had to get like a step so that I could stand on the step, and then the step wouldn't cover his side of the decks, and then we look like the same height, which was wild because I've never been that tall in my life. And we're so different on music styles, but we're really good mates. So we were just like, we tried to plan something, and I was at his house like a couple of days before, and we're like, we should plan something because this is going to go horribly wrong. And then realistically, we planned a set and then didn't stick to it at all, and just rolled with it. And it was all over the place because of course it's going to be, it's MK and Will Clark. Like those sounds realistically don't go together. But it worked. And that was one of them where I'm just like, we're just going to have fun. Let's just fucking have the best time.
Dude, that is the key. That is inescapably the key, dude.
What about you?
And it's funny because, it's funny, by the way, that you mentioned it was a back-to-back.
Yeah.
Because, the one that came to my mind was also back-to-back, given that conversation. And it's weird. Pretty crazy, interesting little weekend I had. This is the fall of 2019. So I guess, it's kind of like the last, like, full crazy tour before lockdown. I had this weekend with J-Flip. Okay. And it was pretty interesting because, I had the show that I'd given the least amount of fucks ever in my life, where I played in Boston, and it was exactly what, this is the same stretch of Dirty Bird as like Dirty Bird Camp Out, the story of like playing the worst, craziest pop music and IDM and experimental stuff. And I got the most backlash I'd ever gotten at a show playing solo in Boston. I played Who Let the Dogs Out, the original version. People hated it. I played Shipping Off to Boston.
I don't know if you know that song.
Okay, so it's when I was in college. This is so embarrassing. I was in a fraternity, and I was like the worst fit because I don't drink and I'm kind of awkward at parties. But what the frat bros would do is they would play this song, and they would mosh. Can I cue it up real quick and play it over Spotify, Shipping Off to Boston? Because I think we want, who's it by?
We need the context.
Live audience. Shipping off to, if I like the debt ship, here we go. I'm shipping up to Boston. See, I don't even know the name of the song. Okay.
Just pick this track because it just had the word Boston in?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Can you enable screen sharing?
Oh,
I'll be able to share my audio.
How do I do that?
Next to where, so screen sharing on your end, there's an arrow.
Multiple participants can share. Perfect. Oh, you know what? Don't mean to just put it up.
Here. Yo, got it. Boom. So this is the song.
Oh yeah, I know this. I know. Yeah.
Okay. And
that's been in loads of films.
So, dude, I played that. So in college, all the frat bros, when there'd be like not a party, it'd be just guys. Everyone would get really drunk and play that song and have a mosh pit. And it's not like three guys to do this. It'd be like 50, 60 dudes. And they would be having more fun than when there was an actual party. It was like their favorite thing to do.
Did you get involved?
No, dude, I'm like a delicate, dainty musician. You know, like I would have, you know, like if you're a tough guy, like you have like a good athletic build. I know you played like sports when you're younger. Like you could probably hang. Me, I would get like bumps and go like flying into a wall and would be out of the season after the season, you know?
Boston wasn't loving it.
Dude, I got like all these messages because I think Boston people, they're very honest, which I think is a great quality. And they don't put up with shit. Like they're kind of that East Coast, like fuck you. And so I got a lot of hate. That was the most hate mail I ever got. Like messages, comments.
Really?
Like a year later, I would like do a post on social media and someone from Boston be like, don't ever come back to Boston. Like, but I don't know. I just like went in. And I actually had a lot of fun that night. And it was so crazy because in my head, it was one of those sets where I was like, dude, I think I kind of killed it tonight. You know, so.
Yeah, but was it like five people saying they didn't have fun? Or was it like a lot of people saying they didn't have fun?
It was like a lot of people, but probably five who messaged me. But that feels like a lot when you're on Instagram. Like, I don't know. I'm sensitive to haters. Yeah. Please don't. Please be nice to people on the internet.
I agree, man. But
I don't know. Anyways, the story is that was me kind of like just being like, no fucks. But having that experience, I think like the following weekend, it's kind of like it was very reaffirming to just like explore the outer limits of my comfort zone as a DJ, being like, okay, well, what if I truly gave no fucks and was as authentic as humanly possible to my own detriment? And, you know, I think when you get that backlash, that's the price you pay. And doing that, I was like, you know what? I'm still here, baby. And there were people who enjoyed that night. And so I'm like, you know what? Well, what's the point of all this stuff? Like, if there's five people who messaged me on Instagram who hate it, that's fine. But there's five people or one person who was like, dude, you spoke to my soul playing Who Let the Dogs Out. then, you know, I'd rather play for that one person than for the five, you know, like six people. You know, like,
It's tough because I love the fact that you just doubled down and just were like, fuck it. I haven't ever done that, but I don't, I guess I don't have Who Let the Dogs Out on my USB stick. And I actually love the fact that you put Who Let the Dogs Out on your USB stick. So I think, first of all, how the hell did you, where were you when you were like, I need to put Who Let the Dogs Out on your USB stick? On my USB.
It's embarrassing because I went years without it. But yeah, I mean, here's the thing about DJing, like, it you know, it's all based on the music you're kind of listening to in the moment and stuff. Because I don't know, I think it, in the years where I haven't been digging in more like eclectic directions, then this stuff really isn't that much of an issue. But with the Who Let the Dogs Out thing, I mean, it goes back to my homies again. Like, I think we just, I don't know who started it, but we just all really began embodying this idea of like pushing the envelope in both directions, both in terms of cheesy pop stuff and experimental stuff. And, you know, I mean, I think I was interested in doing this stuff a little bit when I started, like, you know, Fantastic Voyage. But it just got turned, it just, the like, intensity just has gotten turned up and up to the point of no return.
I love that. Have you ever had, like, pushback from a promoter on, like, what you're playing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, dude, I had a very funny experience in the UK where I played. I got, it wasn't like a very legit show. It was like a small bottle service club. Like, you know, 50 people in the room, like very exclusive. The promoter wasn't allowed into the venue because he wasn't wearing the right shoes, kind of thing.
Wow. Where was it?
It was on the West End. So it's like, it was like not a cool club. It was like secret kind of show. And I started playing, it was so funny because they wanted to, they wanted me to play like melodic house and techno. And I started playing like 140 BPM trap and techno. It's like, you know, old Adam Bayer and new, you know, D Dan and like Adone. And, you know, there's like all this amazing old techno and new techno that's like in the 140s, 150s. Which is perfect because a lot of trap music is at that BPM. So why wouldn't I play that?
Of course you would.
And, it was very funny because the promoter kept on saying 126 as like the BPM that I must play at. And it just kept on going up. And they kept on threatening me to, they kept on threatening to kick me off the decks. And the crowd was just going crazy. Like, girls
they
were handing me
they
drinks, and
it.
I would just hand them to the promoter. I'd be like, "Dude, they're into it." And but what ended up happening was like one of my really good friends who I was staying with in London, like they kept on bullying my friend. And so I was like, okay, I have to. And like I think I probably got kicked off maybe like 15 minutes early.
No, that's okay.
But yeah, so it's like, I like to think that I just, you know, seeded the music to the next DJ early as a, you know, toss of the
bone. I had a promoter once. I was playing, playing a show. I'm not going to mention the city. and I was playing an all night long. And I was playing, I like my, when I'm playing all night long, I usually play like Burial and kind of like really like experimental stuff at the beginning before anyone's there, and maybe like a few people turn up. And then I start kind of playing like some liquid drum and bass. And then once that's over, I kind of go back into like, and kind of build the night up. Generally people have turned up then and like the night's going. But I was playing drum and bass at this party, and my manager came up to me and was like, the owner of the club is like mad that you're playing drum and bass. And I'm like, why? And he's like, well, he's got some bottle service customers. Like, we'd sold the club night out already. It was sold out. We've got some bottle service people that came in and don't like drum and bass. And I was like, fuck it, I'm playing more drum and bass then. This is every reason why to play drum and bass, because I do not want somebody to control what I'm playing. Like, fuck you. You book
can
me.
Can I guess the club and city in the chat without telling anyone?
Let me go for it.
Tell me if I'm right or wrong.
No, but you're very close.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
The first one, I played drum and bass and they loved it.
Oh, really? That's fucking dope.
Loved it.
No kidding. Huh, you know, it just depends who buys the table, I guess.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
It was that guy. You know who you're talking about.
That's funny.
Sorry, everybody.
Classic.
But I like it. I think there has to be a level of the DJ actually pushing, giving the crowd what they want, but also giving them what they want but didn't know they wanted.
Yeah. That's beautifully put. You know, I mean, I think that's my favorite part of DJing. You can literally trick people to enjoy music that they wouldn't have enjoyed otherwise, which is where I completely started. Because, yeah, when I was in high school, I was into electronic music, and no one, you know, generally in LA at that time was into it. Everyone wanted hip hop. I also had this extra level of kind of challenge being a high school DJ, because my high school was not a big like party school.
Yeah.
Everyone smoked weed and was like, would go to a party and just like sit on a couch.
Yeah.
Or like stand around. Like, and so I had to get these like awkward private school, like stoner kids comfortable to dance. And
I can only imagine, especially in America, I can only imagine this.
Yeah, in LA, you know, so like people are like too cool to dance,
super cool,
you know,
kids.
Type of thing.
Yeah.
And the, you know, I think I just my like introduction to like DJing in front of people outside of my bedroom was like this weird journey, because what I figured out this sort of like flow, kind of like you described from Burial to drum and bass as your kind of like trajectory for yourself. For this context, I would begin with my friend Sam. Playing chill hip-hop stuff, like that's, you know, we were into a lot of the funky like Tribe Called Quest, old Biggie stuff, a lot of the 90s hip-hop shit like De La Soul, but then also like People Under the Stairs, Jay Dilla, because all that stuff is very funky, but it's also slow and relaxed. And then from there it's a very easy segue into like funk and disco, especially because like funk, you know, all this, that's where all the beats are being sampled from, like all the drum grooves. Yeah. And so but like proper funk music, like across the board will like help bring the energy up. And then you're into disco, cause you're just working those BPMs like straight up. And then from disco, you can sneak in the house music, and dude, you know, it's once you're there, it's like you're home free. And I think those are some of the most satisfying moments I ever had, with just being up against, like against all odds, getting people to dance, period. And then dance to like underground dance music. Man, it's like the best feeling.
Yeah,
it is the best feeling.
It is. And I think that's the thing, is like, it's a challenge, isn't it? It's like seeing a crowd and you're like, this is such hard work. And you're like, but you just keep going and keep going and keep going. And then eventually there's one record that just cracks them and you're like, okay, I've got them. I've got them. Now they're mine.
Dude, that is an amazing feeling. It's weird. You know, I think what I just described, trying to experience that in like an hour set at a festival is like nearly impossible. You know, it's like,
do you even try?
I don't know, man. I haven't played a festival in a long time, but the last festival set I did was one of my favorites. I did Cross. It was like the last
Cross
show
is great.
Possible.
Cross is great.
Dude, yeah, it was like I played Sunday night last set on the small stage, and it was, you know, it's like that was like the last show before COVID.
It's a pretty good show.
Like, it's, dude, insane, man. And I feel like I got to, I think that was like another culminating experience. It was like a year after the Boston debacle.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like the ultimate arrival point of like, I called to the set. Like you know how like sometimes someone will, you'll get like a review of your set in like a blog or something.
Mm-hmm.
So someone like said something nice about me, but I took a screenshot of the headline, which was like, Justin did okay. Justin did a nice set.
Justin played Who Let the Dogs Out in Boston.
Right. He avoided disaster. No, but I took a screenshot of the headline and then typed out on Instagram, like, my own description of my performance, calling it like Bar Mitzvah Bergheim, because I was juxtaposing like a lot of, cheesy pop music with like a lot of, like gnarly techno stuff.
Yeah.
And, it went really well, but, it's funny. We went on this long tangent, but you know how you were talking about your back to back with MK is one where you really gave no fucks.
Yeah.
The answer that I have that I think is like my favorite was a B2B where, so J Flip, she was going through this interesting time where I hope it's okay that I mentioned this, but I think it's a really cool story and pretty inspiring one where she was having a little bit of a disconnection between the music she thought she was supposed to play and the music that she wanted to play.
Yeah.
And she mentioned that she was having some shows that she wasn't that fulfilled with, because she was caught up in that, disconnection, I guess, you know? And so, you know, off the heels of like the Boston show, Jess and I had a show together and we ended up going back to back and I was like, yo, dude, like, let's play whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I was like, any BPM. And we got to like, you know, 140, 150. I was like, yeah, Jess, like, see, I know you...
No, got it in you.
and she was like, dude, that was so much fun. And she was like, I got to play some of the songs I really wanted. The next night we played, or it was the next day, we played together on a big festival in Atlanta. And like, it was like a proper rave.
Yeah.
Like EDM, you know, it was in a race car track, speedway type of thing.
Yeah. Hot as shit.
And I was like, yo, dude, do you want to combine sets and do the same thing? And she said, yes. And we played full on weird for like a huge crowd. And like, it's one of those things where like, when the crowd is so big for me, I can't tell if people like it or not because I don't have good vision. And so I don't know how well it went or how well it didn't go, but I think it went pretty well.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was a really exhilarating feeling to have this sort of mindset of not giving a fuck and to push another DJ who's sick to do the same and for it to then be like, oh my God, you know, the whole time Jess is playing these songs. I'm like, what is this? What is this? Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know, man. I mean, I think a lot of people in underground house music over the past couple of years have had similar sorts of issues emotionally with how to navigate the ecosystem because it's gotten so much bigger and it's like hardly, I mean, it's just a, you know, it's just grown a lot, which is super positive. But I think whenever things get bigger in music, the way that you respond to expectations, I think, can be tricky, you know? And I think This is my belief. I think most of it can be in your head.
Oh, 100%.
More so than in reality. And yeah. I think, dude, for me, when I compromise myself, bad things start happening. I start getting anxiety. I start not having fun.
Yeah.
I start like then my quality goes down. Yeah. Then I get more anxiety. Then I have less fun. Then the quality goes down even more. Then I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Then I start canceling tours. And then I, you know, I
like
unplug. And that, yeah. that's actually happened to me. And on the flip side, I feel like when you take those steps of like courageousness to like yeah. be yourself, even when you think it might be a disaster, that is where for me, I will have way more fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I'm having more fun, the quality might be better, but yeah. also I don't care what the outcome is as much yeah. because I'm just having fun. And then that is like a positive upward feedback cycle. So that's my experience. And I definitely am someone who pushes these principles to an extreme.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Why not?
Well, I think it's amazing because it's kind of shown in your artist kind of journey as who you are as a person, but also like what you put out. When I first kind of heard you, it was Rain Dance EP on Dirty Bird with Hit It. Like that record was just unbelievable, man. And where you've gone from being part of like the Dirty Bird crew and then kind of doing your own imprint and really kind of just making music that you love, that you want to be part of it. And I can really feel that you're releasing music that I don't want to speak for yourself. Tell me if this is how it is, but this is how it feels for me as like a consumer of your music, is that beforehand, it was like you wanted people to enjoy it and it meant the world. It meant everything that people enjoyed your music. Now it feels like you're just releasing music that you absolutely love releasing yourself.
You know, I would say like my journey, I would say like, first of all, thank you for the kind words. No, that fires me up. Also, before I start rambling, dude, it's so crazy, dude. The first song of yours that I ever heard was in 2013. And it was the song on there's a small record label called No Brainer.
Yeah.
And
classic.
And I checked this last night because I wanted to like, I hadn't heard the song in a very long time, but I remember liking it back then.
And what song was it?
It's called Move. Hold on. I'm pulling up. I got it. Okay. So the song is called Move Like That.
I can't even remember that record.
Dude, and here's the funniest thing, dude. Check this out, because I feel like in the back of my head, I knew this, but...
Oh, dude, I remember that.
Dude, where are you? Move Like That? Dude, we're on the same compilation.
Oh, shit.
In 2013.
That's crazy. And Wood Holly. Is Kill Frenzy on there as well? Scroll down?
Probably.
Oh, no, it's Kill Light.
But Kill Frenzy, I think, had released some music on this label. Dude, Ian Pooley's there.
Yeah.
Purple Disco Machine. Yeah, dude, pretty wild. But so dude, for me, I don't know man, I think I've always, I had the experience, my first year of making music professionally was when I kind of learned these principles.
Yeah.
Because I got a song signed to Dirty Bird when I was 18 and just starting college. And it was the biggest dream come true.
Yeah.
I was like, it was like, holy shit, this is 2011.
Yeah.
Coming up on 10 years.
That's mad.
And I was like, this is insane. This is the coolest thing of all time. I now had Claude Monstrup's email.
Yeah.
And I started sending him a demo a week. And when I began, see, I was never focused on the crowd. I was always just like focused on being a nerd. I was like, I love this music. I want to learn how to make house music. I want to learn how to make this, that, etc. And so, yeah, you know, I think when I had Claude Von Stroke's email, I just started spamming him with music every week. And it was like a descent into chaos because he hated everything. And, you know, I think it was like, I went on this journey of like, it took me 8 months to get a second song signed to Dirty Bird. Mm-hmm. And what had happened, a couple things. One, it was a good time of me like getting more consistent at like production, yeah. Mixing in particular, I think was one of the biggest things. And but a couple big things that I learned were I was trying to make music that I thought would be good for Dirty Bird.
Yes. Yeah. Okay?
Which, you know, is kind of what you were speaking to a little bit, perhaps, but it wasn't like Dirty Bird wasn't popular.
Yeah.
Like it was like no one knew about Dirty Bird in America, like in college.
Yeah.
Like all of my college friends were like, this is boring. Where's the drop? You know? So yeah, it was very much like, yeah, no one likes this, but my favorite DJ. So that's, it's like, there was nothing about fans and stuff. It was way too actually underground. 2011, in the US.
That was when they were big in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. They were very cool in Europe.
Yeah.
Very cool in Europe. Julio Bashmore and stuff.
Yeah.
But dude, here were the things. It was like, I learned that I just needed to allow myself to have fun making music. And a lot of the stuff that I was really inspired by besides Dirty Bird was like a lot of deep house stuff. I was a real big fan of like Gimpster and Free Range. I was really into Jamie Jones, Lee Foss, Talk Creation stuff when they were doing like funky deep house stuff, like, you know, lots of melodies
early
and Maceo funky bass lines,
things like that.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of stuff that I was inspired by that that was not related to Dirty Bird at all. And I started finally allowing myself to just make whatever I wanted, which was still pretty much all house music at the time. And, you know, then there were those songs that were like deep house songs with like diva vocals that I didn't realize this, but it was like the actual antithesis to Dirty Bird. Like Dirty Bird was started in San Francisco almost in reaction to like Miguel Miggs and like sexy deep house stuff, which I liked. And so Pod Von Stroke absolutely hated those songs. But it's interesting because the second song that I ever released in Dirty Bird was actually a juxtaposition of like a lot of deep house shit and like Dirty Bird stuff. And I'll play it for you. Like, it's because you can hear it. Like, so here's like a deep house.
But it's still Dirty Bird. That's what I love about.
Like the point of intersection, because that shit, it's inspired. I didn't realize it, but I was inspired by like Dirty Bird, which a lot of Dirty Bird is inspired by drum and bass, and drum and bass is a weird. There is a lot of inspiration you can draw upon for both like gnarly shit and beautiful, like deep, you know, you talk about liquid drum and bass, but this song also has the wubs, like, you know, like, you know, so it has like the big bass line. So I like threw it all in the blender and you know, I think actually my biggest pitfalls over the course of my career when I was like really struggling with like with the creative side of making music was not when I was focused on
what year was that you were struggling?
It just went in waves. But I think within the first 5 years of my career, first four really, while I was in college, it was like there were some moments where it was struggle time, like year one. And then maybe like year three was like another period of struggle. I was a little bit more isolated. Like I moved out of like a bigger, like, you know, social environment into like an apartment with one person. And I think that kind of like got in my head a little bit, because the first year I was making music in a dorm, and second year I was making music in a frat house. And the aspect of people being around was very cool to me, because people would ignore me. I was like the weird guy making music. And then something would happen on the song, and all of a sudden people would poke their heads in and be like, yo, what is this? And I'd be like, it's me.
Is that?
I don't know. I liked that ability to have like people
critics
around me.
It's critics.
Like, listen, not even as critics, because like everyone hated house music. So
it
was like they were all critics, but it was more so like, I don't know. I just tuned out. The assumption was no one was going to like it. But if I did get some positive feedback, that was useful. But back to the struggle period of like, year three for me, to be very reductive about it, but it's not obviously so concrete. But when I would get caught up in, I had this period of time where I started trying to be more serious.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to try making techno, which I'd never made before. And my mindset was just like, it just wasn't fun.
Yeah.
Like, it was like me being like alone, wearing all black. You know, I was in a long distance relationship on Zoom,
yeah.
Like on Skype at the yeah. time, like she had moved. And I think that kind of sums up the, you know, the sort of mindset that I was in. So it was obviously like a confluence of different factors, but yeah, I put out the EP on Dirty Bird that was like trying to be techno. And it was the one, it was the EP before the one you liked.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, I think
which it was one was actually it? The only. Let's give us a play because I might know it.
It's called Instincts. And it's kind of funny because some people liked it. Like, it was actually my only EP to get, like, a. It was like, or I, maybe not my only, but maybe my first EP that got a write up in DJ Mag.
Yeah.
So, like, someone liked it, but I don't know. It didn't feel. It was like, I don't know. It was like. To me, the song, there's still cool things about them, but I think I wasn't allowing myself to have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's funny because I think making techno, for me, it took a couple of years yeah. to figure out. Like, I think I only finally made a techno song that I was like, this feels like authentic and yeah. proper, maybe like a couple of years ago. The stuff I put out in Ovum last year is the music I'm actually talking about.
It was great, that EP. I loved it.
Yeah, dude, I'm hyped you heard it.
I love that.
Dude. But yeah, man, I don't know. I think I think it doesn't matter what kind of music I make. Mindset is everything for me. Yeah. If I'm not having fun, it all can go south, you know? And that can happen on a track where I'm not having fun, and then I have to go back to an older version
yeah.
My mindset started drifting, and then I can salvage a song sometimes. That's kind of this, maybe a bit of the story for the song that I just put out yesterday. Where
yeah, the Rumors record.
2 years. I
love it. 2 years.
Yeah.
Jeez, man. Yeah. That's wild. It's a great record. I was just listening to it beforehand.
Dude. Oh, thank you.
And this is the thing that I kind of like really want to like get out of this. And this is just me being completely selfish because you are releasing fucking anything. And yeah. How does that, on a business side of things, right? Because we're talking business as well. We're in the music business. How do you feel that fits the business side of this industry?
Dude, well, I'm hyped that you opened the door on this conversation because, and I love how you worded that, you're like selfishly, because dude, I mean, there's so much that, this is a pretty interesting conversation, just like because I feel like we are approaching things from very different perspectives.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot that I see you doing that I'm like, damn, Will is killing it and has it all figured out. And it's interesting because like I'm gonna flip the
the
turntables are turn the turntables. Oh, how the turntables! shout out The Office. But yeah, you know, it's just interesting because I think before I dive in, I just want to say, like, I think any approach can work. You know, you're a beautiful example of someone who I think, like, from my perspective, does the opposite where, like, I think there's a lot of strategy. You know, I see your career and, you know, I can see these different sort of like almost chapters of like you exploring different things
yeah.
and kind of like they seem to get buttoned up and then you move on
yeah.
in a way that's like very easy to process as a consumer,
yeah.
which I think is kind of a cool thing because, yeah, I think the big thing that you are avoiding,
yeah,
which is great, is people will come to your show and not be horribly disappointed
yeah,
because
yeah,
they were
totally.
Expecting this and get that.
Yeah.
So that's like, which I think is really cool because I will just paint you the picture as poorly as possible up front. You know, I think like the most extreme thing is there are people who will message me saying, Justin, I thought I was going to see a band play
yeah.
and it was a fucking DJ set. And then the opposite. I will get the opposite too. Justin, I thought you were going to be DJing house music and you were singing and there were guitars. So yeah, like, yes, that is what you sign up for. Disappointment from
yeah.
people. And, you know, I think, exploring live music and singing is probably the extreme of that. Cause like when there's like live drums and guitars instead of like synth bass lines and shit. And it's like, you're preparing yourself for a lot of disappointed fans, but
how does that feel though?
You know, I approached it the same way I approached DJing, where I was like, okay, so as a DJ, I can, you know, yes, sometimes I'm like chaos, crazy person, but there's other times where it'll be more, you know, like in high school when I was going to trick people into dancing to house music. So I pretty much used the same philosophy
but reverse
and
it.
Frameworks for sneaking the live music into it. That's how it began. Whereas I made my first song with friends who were singing and playing guitar and would play it in my DJ sets once I got the crowd going.
Yeah.
And then that one song turned into five songs.
Yeah.
And then there was a point where I wanted to start singing and I wanted to have a drummer and I wanted to turn off the CDJs. I didn't want the CDJs because I was initially, it was like karaoke. It was like play a track, guitar and singing on top, which is something that a lot of DJs do. But for me, it felt a little inauthentic and I wanted to like really get that jam experience. So dude, what started happening was I would play a DJ set and then build it up into a moment where I turned off the turntables. The drums were set up, tucked in the corner, the guitar amp, microphone, bass, etc. And that's how I would sneak it in.
Yeah.
And then that chunk from live music began as like one song or two songs. And then grew and grew until like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it ultimately grew to the point where it could be a full set. So that was my experience. But to answer your actual question more directly, you know, I think I'm still learning how to do it better. I'm not like, I think, you know, I'm not doing it as bad as well as possible, you know, as efficiently and effectively as I could. But I'm having the most fun, so I don't really care. And that's why I'm here to learn about you, because I can learn how to like maybe get a little bit more strategic. But
I think we were learning from each other, because you're having fun. And don't get me wrong, like I'm having fun, but there's been a lot of times where I'm not having fun. And and I talk about that quite openly. For me, when I'm not having fun is when I have so many expectations of myself.
Yes.
And you're just like releasing, like this is no word of a lie, like releasing music isn't fun for me anymore, which is weird to say.
Will, I want to just give you a big old hug, dude.
No, that's not, and that's not in like, that's not due to anyone. That's purely what I do in my own head. If you
know
what
I mean. That's why you need a hug, dude.
it's like...
There's not out there someone else that I need to give a hug so that they're nice to you. It's you, dude. It's all you.
It's just like, it's more so like, I don't know, I put so much, my expectations are so high every time I release a record. And I think it's purely because I think personally, without sounding arrogant and kind of big-headed, is like the music that I'm releasing now, I personally feel like is the best music. I've put the most amount of time into that music. And when your music doesn't get recognized by a few curators of playlists and it doesn't get the like kind of the love that you feel that it should be, and your music should never get the love that it should, if you know what I mean. There's no such thing, but it's just so frustrating to me.
So dude, the, you know, expectations, comparing one song to the next, comparing one artist to the next,
that's the worst.
None of these things are good for being creative and having fun. You know, like, you know, I think these are the trappings of success that like we all need to be conscientious of. The trappings of taking things seriously, which can happen even if success isn't there and can debilitate people. Mm. You know, these are all really powerful forces. I want to hear more about your journey. But I'll tell you, like with me, dude, most of my songs don't get on playlists. Most of my songs don't get all of the things that you think you need to get achieve success. Do they still do well? Sometimes very much so. What I see is like, you know, like on Spotify, for instance, because I know that's something that you're probably thinking about when you talk about curators. There's a really cool idea about not how your song does in week one, but week 51.
Yeah.
You know, it's this idea of like, do people actually continue to listen to your music and stuff like that? But bro, when I put out techno stuff, no one's going to listen to that shit on Spotify. Like, and why would you? It's like, I don't know, man. I think for because like, who knows, like with the strategic approach, maybe when touring reopens, like you're going to be so well positioned to like be a headline festival superstar, which I will probably not.
You'll turn up with Who Let the Dogs Out and your guitar. But yeah, I love that. No, for me is like, a lot of it is very strategic. A lot of it. But walk
through it, dude. Tell me if you're comfortable talking about.
Yeah, like, man, sort of I'll answer whatever you kind of want to know. And cause I don't like, I'm learning from you a lot more so.
And I just want to say, like, dude, huge, huge fan of what you're doing with your label and this new chapter of music. Like, you sent me Hallelujah maybe a year before it came out, and I played it nonstop. And I was like, damn, dude. And I also want to say, like, for me, when I hear that sort of stuff, I feel like the risks that you've taken musically on the new stuff, to me, that sounds like you've been having fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, exploring. I hear, like, dub techno on Hallelujah, and I hear, like, you know, nostalgic trance elements you know, like some of the other songs you put out. There's like the MK collab too. Yeah. Like he's got his touch. So the song you just put out, I hear like some like lo-fi house meets melodic.
Yeah.
It's like, you're really, to me, I feel like on paper, musically, it seems like you're having fun.
I'm loving making music. Absolutely loving making music. I'm just not really enjoying the releasing process.
It's weird because I feel like your shit, that's so crazy to me, because I've been like, you know, following your journey as a fan.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, good for Will. His shit is popping off. Like, it's crazy, by the way. Like, you know, the impact, like just like looking at Spotify alone, because I, you know, did the whole like, you know, going to chat with Will, going to check up on, you know, the music and how it's going. And dude, it's like, it's going phenomenally well. And so I'm very surprised to hear that you are grappling with these things, because I'm like, and it's the classic thing. It's like, you see things going well for someone and you assume that they're like on top of the world. Yeah. And talk to me. What is going on?
So for me, what it is that you achieve one thing and it does really well. Like the first two releases on my label, well, all of my releases have done well on my label. And that's the thing. If on paper, if I go, what, like, they, if let's say 2 years ago I would be in the situation that I'm at, but I'm very much the person that I just always want to better. Like, I always want to kind of achieve more, and it's not, for me, it's not about, for me, it's just always continuing to grow and do better than the last thing that I did put out, if you know what I mean. And that's the thing that I struggle with the most, really.
So here's my advice. You should make an EP that you think will be received horribly and put it out. You can put it out on my label and hope that it gets, you know, 100 plays.
Yeah.
And pretty much try and realize the worst case scenario. And you will immediately be free from like the chains that you think are, I don't know. So, and I like, that's like my suggestion for how to like just snap out of this mindset, is to like confront all of the fears head on in the most extreme.
But
fashion.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that I'm kind of doing now is that I'm putting the pressure on myself because I'm self-releasing, because I'm putting out my own label. And that is the only real reason. When I really, like, I've got an EP coming out on Dents and Peaker's label next Friday.
Sick.
And like, I know that Spotify, like no one's going to want to listen to that on Spotify. It's hard as fuck, like super hard. And I don't expect anything to happen of that, if you know what I mean. I really like, I'm purely just putting that out because I love putting that music out. But it's for where, for me, when I'm self-releasing, I put so much pressure on myself.
But, you know, I mean, I guess to me that makes a little bit of sense, given that you're, if you're self-releasing it, you're in charge of your label. I'm curious, like, how does your, can you talk a little bit more tangibly about how you've, you know, dude, I mean, because you have, because I think first, before talking about like how to improve your mindset, it is really, it's worth giving you some fucking huge props on what you've been able to achieve. Like, and I'm curious, can you talk a little bit about, you we need to acknowledge that you have been performing two roles,
yeah.
You know, you're label man and artist. And so let's talk to like, let's disassociate these two people and talk to like label Will Clark, yeah. Man, who should want to do better and better. That's like, that is what you are doing as a label. You want to get the music out there. That's like the, that is the job. That is the service. It's a beautiful thing to get a great song heard by people, whether it's your own or by another artist. So let's just talk about that. If you're down, like, you know, how, you know, can you talk about what have been the keys to success with your label, whether it's like distribution or like help from management? What's, because often it takes a village, even if it's your own label.
Well, that is it. That is the village. So when I took on, when I started working with my manager, a guy called Ryan, we started working together 2019, I believe. And literally we set a load of goals out from day one. Like we spoke for months. I had like a really shit time with management. We spoke loads before I took him on. Because I didn't want to just go into a management for like no reason, if you know what I mean. I don't see the point in having a manager just to have a manager. And we just built up this cool relationship. And so when we started working together, we kind of set a list of goals of what we want to achieve. And we still do that every year. And one of them was to get a label, but I didn't want to just release start a record label without the right team around me. So it was just a year of just planning on this record label, really. And everything from branding to a name to like, the name took me about 6 months to work out. And then the branding was probably another 4 months. And then having, to start for the first year of the label, we had a label manager in the UK, a guy called Nick Harris. And then we had a team in Australia, and we had a team in America that were kind of looking after individual kind of parts of the record label in that territory. And then we, on top of the label manager, we also had a team in Europe. And I just wanted to make sure that this record label starts with everyone singing from the same song sheet, but also everyone wanting to kind of, everyone in their specific territories and their experts in the specific territories to kind of make sure that the records do the best they possibly can do, really. I'm just somebody that writes music and plays it, and I can kind of manage that, everyone, but I'm not an expert at distribution. I'm not an expert at running a record label, so why would I try and do that? Like, I'd rather get somebody else to do that for me that's better at that for me.
So I think here's your problem right here, is your unwillingness to acknowledge that you are running a label. Because, and you're saying, I'm just the guy who makes music. You're fucking not. and that's I think that's a cool thing, you know. Yeah. But here's my biggest piece of advice. What you need to do, because this idea of wanting to follow up your next release on the label with success and do the best job possible is kind of part of running a label.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
what we need to establish for you is that there are these two different personalities.
Yeah.
There's Will Clark, the artist, and Mr. Clark, the label guy. And you need to, what you do not want to happen is you do not want the wrong person in the wrong chair at the wrong time, you know? And so,
100%. Like, have you had that with your label?
Well, my label's scrappy. So like, you know, we haven't had like, we haven't, like, you've done a much better job on running a record label than I have. It's in terms of, like, real quick, when you talk about all these different teams, what are you talking about? Like, are these different distributors? Are these companies?
Distributors, licensing, like people, like other labels that license. So I have a licensing deal. Actually, now it's worldwide, apart from Australia. So I have a company called Good Company that license all we have is now. And they run everything worldwide. Beforehand, I have a label called Etc. in Australia who license my stuff in Australia. So they're kind of in charge of everything in Australia and New Zealand.
Wait, did you have this shit set up from day one with the first release? Wow.
I wasn't going to start a record label if I didn't.
Dude, because that's so legit, man. See, yeah, you have such a good... You know, this when I talk strategy, like there's so much to it, and this is interesting for me to hear because I think, let's dig in a little bit more and we'll wrap around to like how maybe we can get you to have more fun.
I'm having fun, it's just I just don't like the process of releasing music, and that the only reason why I'm in that is because I know the real reason is because I want my records to be successful so everyone else is successful that's working with me. That's purely the reason. For me, I've never had this happen like in my career where I've got a team around me that I'm so happy with that I want to be successful so they earn more money. Like, I want to earn more money. So, and this isn't about money, but for like my manager, let's say for instance, I want to be able to give him an insane life through what we do together.
And is at the end, struggling right now?
Pardon?
Is he like,
no, he's cool. He's fine. He's absolutely fine.
So do you need to feel that pressure?
Yeah, because I think for me, how I work well under pressure.
But do you have fun? Because
I have fun when I'm writing music, but not when it gets released. But at the end of the day, when it gets released, there's nothing I can do. So like there was a release that I released last year that I didn't do as well as I thought it would do. And I spent like about a month just like, what the fuck do I do? And then my most recent release, Run, absolutely love it. It didn't get all the love from Spotify and from Radio One. Fine, but I genuinely love that record. So I'm like, fuck it. But there's still that pressure at the beginning. Like, this record has to do well. If it doesn't do well, then what have we got going? But you're right. The one thing is that I'm just like, no, I love the music. And if I absolutely believe in the music 100%, then there's nothing else I can kind of argue with.
It's interesting, man. I mean, I think
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's just something that I feel like is worth mentioning. Like, when I think we are the most at risk of being destroyed by our own pressure and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
When we don't realize it,
yeah.
You know, like when we're not like being honest with ourselves in terms of like, this is the pressure I'm putting on myself. This is what I'm actually trying to do. You know, I mean, it's because I think it's, I don't know, man. It's once you realize like, yo, I'm putting pressure because I need this number to be big.
Yeah.
You know, and like to me, it sounds like that's stuff that you're like, you know what, dude, I love this song. I don't care about these plays.
Yeah.
You know, like once you disarm, once you identify the problem, you will often disarm like 80 to 90% of its power.
100%.
When you truly realize it, because it's the shit that's nagging at you that you don't realize that's like, that will really fuck you up. I don't know, man. Can you, cause I'm curious about genuinely trying to dig in on this with you. Like, cause you say like, dude, I've been talking about this all the time, like not having fun. Paint me the picture. What does it look like when you are the most succumbed by pressure and not having fun? Like, what is that moment? Give me paint the picture for me.
I think it's the highs and lows of being an artist, right? You know, I don't know, this might not be you, I don't know, but for most people that I've spoken to, you can have like the highest highs and the lowest lows in a day from being an artist. And for me, it's why do I do what I do? And I think that's what I forget, why I do what I do sometimes. And I think it's just the case of that. It's so strange during this time as well, during coronavirus, because I talk about this a lot with my manager, Ryan, and I'm just like, the only way we can see we're doing well now at this moment in time, at this very moment in time, is if your record streams well, because there's no DJs playing. There's no DJs really giving feedback. There's no one playing your music. You can't play your music to crowds. So the only real way for you to be like, yeah, this record's doing really well, is to see those streaming numbers go up, or to see it go on playlists and then the streaming numbers go up, or people talk about how amazing it is and things like that. And social media is a little bit kind of wayward. Like, people follow you because they want to follow you. They don't follow you because they don't like you. I'd like to think, anyway. Like, I'm sure there's some people that are like that. So the fact that everyone says on social media that they love your new record, it's like, well, you follow me, so I'd like to hope that you like my music because you follow me and you're kind of invested in it, right? So it kind of paints this like picture, this like glass tinted windows where you're like, that's not, it's true, like I it's great that they love the music, but then when it doesn't kind of move into streams or move into support on like certain playlists and things like that, I'm like, well, how can I know that if this record's doing well? But for me, it's when people discover you through your new music, and that's when I'm like, okay, this is moving.
So here, I'm gonna push some buttons and let me know if this is productive or not. So
this has turned into like you interviewing me.
Yeah, I warned you. I was like, Will, I'm gonna flip the script on you. Dude, so you know how I talked about, like, you know, there's like record label Will and then artist Will?
Yeah.
There's also manager Will.
Oh, okay? 100%.
And like, you know, I mean, you've self-managed yourself for a long time. Like, I know, I have no doubt in my mind, like, I'm sure your professional relationship with your manager is very collaborative. Cause you're someone who's like very strategic and, you know, I just think it's important to realize that there needs to be like a disconnect between manager Will and artist Will.
Oh, 100%.
I'm teaching like an artist, I've been doing like artist education stuff, teaching people how to make music and stuff. And what I always tell people is like, do not let your inner manager into the studio.
Yeah.
You know, like, obviously I what I tell people is like, wear a different hat if you need to, like put on a collared shirt when you're doing your manager stuff, and then take off the button down and make music and have fun. But I think when everything you just said in terms of gauging the success of a record is like manager will talking.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
You have said nothing about like artist will. And I will give you sort of like my framework for how I have been thinking about this stuff, because your comments are so well-founded. There is no way to like really gauge stuff. There aren't the shows. You can't get that like connection with people. You're looking at comments. You don't know if they're authentic or not, you know? So you're looking at numbers, which is great for your manager, but it is a dangerous, or not dangerous, but just like, it is a path that leads to nowhere, to be looking at numbers for what you are really in need of, is like artistic fulfillment, to me, is what it sounds like. And numbers will never, ever, ever do it, because here's the thing about numbers. Pick a number, there's always a bigger one.
There's always a bigger one.
So there's no satisfaction. And then what happens is whatever that biggest number was, then all of a sudden every number below it is now a smaller number.
So
it's like every success just makes every not success more of a failure. Yeah. So it's like, it is just, there is no, because no artist is ever just like this. And then do you ever really find pure satisfaction at any of these new milestones? When 1,000 turns to 10, 100, a million, a billion.
No, it's not. It's always that what's next. Always.
And that is the what's next is the job for your manager. That's great. You know, because if there wasn't a what's next, you would quit and you would just like stop making music, which is an option, but like you make great music and I think people enjoy it. So like,
I
keep on going.
I totally agree. I think for me, I'm fully aware what I do. I'm full like in that situation, because I'm the first, but my manager doesn't even say it. Like I'm the one that says it to my manager. My manager's not like, and it's always been the thing for me. And it's been like that since before I was writing music in my life before, if you know what I mean, and things like that. Like it's just something that I have to just accept that's how I am.
but no, dude. See, and that's bullshit, dude. Like, because that's a part of who you are. But to me, it just sounds like there's another part of you that like might be there that we just need to develop a little bit more. That's there. I think that will provide a more like balanced foundation, because you need a bit of what you're talking about.
If you didn't have
that at all, it would be a disaster.
I wouldn't be where I'm at. I honestly think like if I didn't put in the work that I put in now and that I have done in the past like few years, my career would have been over 100%.
And you know, I think here's the thing, like all of those motivations and those strategies, I think their prime directive is about allocating your energy in a smart way. So it's like, you know, working hard and working strategically so that you're getting the most bang for your effort. As long as you're disciplined in those areas, then like that's all that those things are useful for. You know, but you receive ultimately diminishing returns, especially when you start getting more successful. But here is like where I would want, I know you have this in you. It's just about reconnecting with it. It's like, you know, and I think it's easier to do when we're DJing because it's person. But the most powerful thing that I think I would encourage you to like think about and just build your self-awareness is that feeling of personal connection when you put out a song. When that one person sends you that nice heartfelt message, or you get that text message from your mom, or that one friend who you grew up with who's been listening to your music for 10 years, like could be like a number of those people. But, you know, it's like on Instagram, for instance, or like in your life, if you read 10, or if you read three nice messages from people that you cared about or spoke on the phone to someone who's like, man, I really loved that song. You know, like that will trump the billions of plays always.
Oh, always. Because, yeah.
And so I think like that is,
I think sorry to jump in with this record run, that's what's happened. That's why it's kind of, for me, is like, I've enjoyed it so much. Because I've had like mates that don't even listen to house music.
If yes.
You
know what
I mean. And you're just like, okay, it's not all that bad, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's not all that. But it is that disconnect. You're right. It's that. It's the disconnect from artist, label manager and all of that and kind of wanting more.
And you are also kind of like an ambitious dude who is also very humble and, you know, you're well-spoken and, you know, I think the, you know, you just got to be, you know, I think being willing to say like, I am my own manager as well as Ryan or whatever, and yeah. I am running my label as well as with all the people who help, that you can start creating a little bit of separation and begin removing power from some of these things that you've thought are super important. They are important, but the degree to how powerful they are needs
they're not
to be
important.
Put in check.
They're not, you know? It's not important in the grand scheme of life, in this grand scheme of like, let's be honest, you're only as good as your last record, but if you're releasing 20 records a year, then you're kind of rolling with it. It doesn't really matter what happened to your last record at the end of the day. And I think for me, I think there's just a combination of lots of things and not being around. I think the coronavirus shit, I've been cool the whole time. And then until it was releasing music, and I'm like, I'm struggling with not playing the records, not kind of seeing that. So I doubled down on the numbers, like even more so.
Yeah. And dude, can't blame you for that, because like we don't have, it's like it requires more effort to get that personal connection back. I think for me, like, you know, having a label has actually been a big source of it, because yeah. My label is not like, we don't have like fancy distributors across the world and stuff, but we have like, there are a couple, you know, like kids who reach out to me about internships. Yeah. And then we have like a bunch of like really nice people, like a bunch of like my main PR person was like an intern, and like taught her how to like pitch to blogs and SoundCloud channels. And she now is amazing.
Yeah.
And so we just have this kind of like, you know, for me, like, we also work a lot of artists that are like brand new.
Yeah, I love that.
And for some of these artists, it's like, dude, reaching 1,000 plays is so meaningful.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, I try and it's very hard to do, but, you know, if I can at least be in contact with these artists and like sharing, reveling in the victories together. And, you know, I think the most meaningful thing that can happen in my label, I feel like, is when my like label manager or like the PR person will be like, oh, I love this song, I can't wait for it to come out. I'm yeah. like, yay! You know, yeah. Like, I think that stuff, it's always the personal, you know, we as humans, we're not programmed to respond emotionally to numbers.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Like, we cannot even comprehend numbers. Like,
no.
Like exponential growth is something that the human mind has no way of understanding, yeah. You know, and like the difference between, you know, 100 billion versus like, you know, 10 million. It's like, those are both big numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
The difference between those numbers is
insane.
The same difference as like, yeah, yeah. 10 million and like 0.01 or something. Like, you know, carry some zeros.
But yeah, I've got friends that are like extremely successful with numbers, mm-hmm. like extremely successful overall. Like we all do, right? Like, and it's interesting because they a lot of them have exactly the same, like my last record did 500 million streams and my record before my new record did 10 million and I'm like, dude, you still 10 million is pretty fucking good. Like,
dude,
but it's just it's that. And I don't know about you, but have you kind of came across that in your career for you, like where you're just like, is there been anything where you're like, this is not making it? I know we spoke about when you're trying to make music for other people and kind of not enjoying making music, but is there came a point where it's like, I need to change what I'm doing to kind of move forward?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, and I think I think one of the most interesting things about being an artist is like the journey is always evolving. You're always evolving as a person. And I think whenever you reach new destinations, sometimes different states, different like shifts in attitude can become very important. But this is such an interesting conversation, dude, because I think, you know, I'm not here to say that like these aspirations to do better and better are bad. And I actually do think they're kind of important for the label person. It's just important. It's just the key is to keep those powers in check and to know that on a spiritual human level, the personal connection is far more meaningful. So as long as the importance of the goals is to make sure that you are putting in the effort and putting in the effort in a strategic way. Mm-hmm. So for me, I mean, I think where I'm at, you know, I think it would be, you know, I'm hoping to, you know, I get a little bit more strategic so that I can, I think my biggest goal.
I can help you with that.
honestly, will you be my manager? Dude, but I think, you know, I think like, obviously it's nice to get those things, but I'd say like my biggest goal for where I'm at currently is I want to get a little bit better at telling stories and making them clear to people because I think the idea of narrative is an important one because that is the missing piece between people coming to your show being confused versus understanding it. And so, you know, I think I just have all these different interests and I think my job is like, this is how I like to set myself up conceptually is like artist Justin is like a 8-year-old child with like parents who allow him to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, he can just run around doing whatever, play with food. And that's where I think I'll make the best music and not think about it at all. And then the job is to then hand the baton to my inner manager to then figure out like, what is the best way to do this? And I think, you know, it all depends on the music. And I think for me, it's a bit complicated because the directions that I'm the most excited about right now are very different. It's like, I'm really interested in kind of like quirky, forward-thinking underground club music and also like singing and songwriting. Mm-hmm. There's moments of intersection. Like I think the song I just put out, you know, I was very, you know, I was so inspired by Burial, for instance. I spent like 5 hours trying to recreate the drums in Archangel without sampling them and didn't say no Burial samples.
Yeah.
But it's obviously not as amazing and refined as him. But
you used a sequencer. That's the thing. He didn't like none of his was quantized.
It's like SoundForge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, and it's all video game samples.
But the thing is, me listening to that, to yours, I'm like, it's worlds apart, but it's just as good in the world that it's sitting in. If that makes sense.
So here, how about this? Well, just for fun, because I think I have like 20 minutes left before I have to run. If that works with you, dude.
Yeah.
Just I think this would be really funny for people. Can I play you maybe 30 seconds of two different songs that sum up?
Yeah, do it.
The sort of stuff that I'm interested in. Okay. Let's see. Here we go. Boom, boom, boom. Everyone can now see my computer screen. Okay, so here, I'll play you the two directions. This is like what I'm trying to reconcile. So I have like a forward thinking album that's like inspired by The Matrix.
Yeah.
And here's what it sounds like. Tell me if my sound works, by the way.
Yeah, it's working. Good.
So that's like one thing.
Yeah.
And so that's like a whole album of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the other side of me. Hold on. Where is it? Here. Okay. Where is it? Hold on. There we go. Perfect. Here's the other side. Let's see if this works real quick. Come on, internet. Give me. Yeah,
there we go.
I'll play this one a little longer because it's more sensitive.
You're scared. I know you're afraid. You're scared. I know you're afraid. But do you have to be afraid of what they'll say? Afraid of
so right before the chorus.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, what, you were gonna say something?
No, carry on, go for it.
No, dude, you first, it's your show. What were you gonna say?
It's worlds apart, but I dig them both.
Aw.
It's like, how are you gonna release that, all of that? Or are you gonna release it all? Is it gonna all be under Justin J, or is it gonna be under different,
you know? So I think at some point I might need to start an alias, but I feel like aliases are actually really more important when you're humongous, you know, because like if you get so big that you're trapped by expectations where like stadiums, you know, like are going to be disappointed because you're doing something different. I don't know. Like, I mean, I think.
But Diplo, I disagree with you on that to a certain extent as well, because. Mm-hmm. I think there does come a point, and this isn't looking on the business side of things. This is looking at who your fans are as an artist, right? And I think sometimes the reason why we put aliases out is because it, and this is only for me, I guess I can only speak for myself, but it's about reaching out to an audience that maybe you wouldn't reach out to before. By doing that under a different name.
Why do you say that? Like, do you think reaching out to an audience that you wouldn't reach out to before, why?
Because sometimes they're not going to listen to what you make normally under your normal name.
They might not give it the fair chance, you're saying? Yeah.
I think that's just human beings, right? I think I can do it, if you know what I mean. Like, there's so many times where I've been in this situation where I'm like, I can't be bothered to listen to that because I know what it's going to be. And then I listen to it, I hear it in a club, and I'm like, what the fuck is that record? And it's like completely, and it's just that kind of judging a book from its cover. And I think sometimes aliases allows artists to really just do what the fuck they want.
Yeah,
but you're in a situation where you're doing what the fuck you want.
I think it's all mental, dude. Because, like, I think, because I don't know. I think if you really, let's say, I mean, who would be a good example of this?
There isn't any good examples. Jamie XX. There's
so many, dude.
Not that have came from the house and techno background. That had just gone.
James Blake.
He's not house and techno though. He's came from a pop background.
He came from dubstep.
Yeah, but his first album was singer songwriter.
Yeah, but that was the transformation shift. But James Blake was making kind of bangers.
Yeah, like, they're like, great, but they are not club records.
Oh no, but that's what I'm saying. No, they are. He was making club stuff, like. Yeah, dude, like, look at these, like, I don't know if you know these labels, but, like, Hemlock, Hessel Audio, RS, like, dude, like, these are club, they're artsy. It's obviously not, like, it doesn't sound like Adam Baer, but it's, by the way, I fuck with Adam Baer. but I'm saying James, like, is a good example of someone who, like, he just goes on the curveball. Diplo is another good example of someone who just, like, does whatever he wants. So I don't know,
but
man.
With Diplo at the beginning of his career, he was very, like, this is what we do. And then he kind of, when he got to that level where his level was so big that whatever he puts out, it doesn't matter because it's going to get there. I think James Blake came from a very, he didn't come from the house and techno background where he's like a DJ. I'm a DJ. He's always been a songwriter from day one.
Here's the thing that I'm curious about, because, you know, when you talk about Diplo, and because I think you're somewhat, this is where our perspectives are different, and I'm so curious to kind of, like, you know, I think pretty much the combination of both both perspectives is what will yield the best results. Like, you know, when you talk about the Diplo story and you're like, he presented something specific that was easy to understand, and then it got him big, and then he won back his artistic freedom. Yeah, like, I guess, how do you think about that for yourself in terms of creating a sense of, like, clear narrative for, like, this is what I'm about, this is what I'm doing? Like, I don't know, man. What's been the most meaningful shit that you've done that has helped you kind of achieve this amazing success, you know?
Yeah, I think for me is just being completely open and honest with where I'm at and what I'm trying to achieve. Right. And for me, like, it's clear for me, and I don't think it's necessarily always clear for everybody else, but I didn't start on Dirty Bird, but that's where my first success came from. And then I'm kind of moved away from Dirty Bird and started releasing on more European labels. And then I started my own label. They're like the three transitions in my career, but I'm this, like, okay, so this chapter here, I am literally tying this up with a nice little bow, and that bow is never going to be opened again until I feel like I've achieved that next chapter that I've set out to do, if you know what I mean.
Wow, that's so wild. Can you talk to me a little bit about goals? Like, what do goals look like tangibly? Like, yeah.
Tangible. That's the key. That's the key word. Tangible goals. Tangible and achievable. It has to be achievable. Like, I think there's a difference between goals and dreams, right? Like, one of my biggest goals and dreams in my life is to headline Glastonbury Festival. It's down. I live 15 minutes away from there. From me, like, realistically, like, that's like 8-year-old Will talking, if you know what I mean. 30-year-old Will is like, dude, come on, man. As Will Clark, you're never going to headline Glastonbury Festival, Pyramid Stage. You're never, and that's not me being negative about myself. I'm just being realistic, if you know what I mean. But I'm not saying that I would never be able to headline it doing something else, if that makes sense.
You avoided the question, my dude, but I enjoyed your answer. But tangible goals, like, what do they look like? What are, you gave an example of for yourself, unrealistic ones. I could challenge you on them, by the way.
Yeah, of course. we could challenge everybody
on every limiting belief. Yeah. I think, well, like, limiting beliefs are always good to challenge, but what are some of the tangible goals that you're like, that that either you've achieved, or, yeah, I want to hear a couple that you have achieved as a start, like some of the ones that a few years ago you set out to do, and then you fucking did it. Like,
I guess we've spoken about a lot of them. Like, record label was the main, one of the main ones. Also chain, like, not, this sounds really awful, but not being a Dirty Bird artist was a huge thing for me.
Really? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, of course. Like, I was writing music that was never going to be released on Dirty Bird. And yeah. I wanted to be associated with different artists as well. I wanted to play different stages. I felt like being part of the Dirty Bird crew, as much as I love everyone there and they're still all my homies, I felt like it was holding me back in lots of places in my career. And the only way to stop that is by moving on, if you know what right. I mean. And also it got to the point where I want to really, it goes back to that enjoying what I'm doing. And there's been a few places in my career where I just don't enjoy, and until I know why I'm not enjoying it, but I have to work that out in that process, right? And yeah, the process for me in a lot of working out what I want is knowing exactly what I want, but it's that gap between knowing what I want and then going to achieve it. And it's that gap in between. It's like, how do I achieve it? So let's say, for instance, the record label. How do I achieve it? What's my actual goals of running a record label? Why do I want to run a record label? Well, the reason why I want to run a record label is because, first of all, I want to control everything I release. And if I love a record, most of the records that I'm releasing on my label sonically wouldn't fit on other people's labels. And I don't want to wait 3 months for a label person to come back to me to say they want to release it. Like, I want to release it. Simple. Yeah. I don't want to give a record label something I've spent a long time putting a lot of effort into my records, and then it's just another release to them to kind of boost their career. So for me, like, starting the record label, and also, and this is why I haven't released anybody else's music on that, on my record label yet, because I don't feel like I'm at the point where I can give other people's music the benefit of the best possible release. And that's just the way I want to take the record label. I don't just want to release house and techno on the record label. I want to release really, really fucking good music. And whether that's an electronica record, that's an electronica record, if you know what I mean. But for me, it's just with tangible goals or achievable goals, is once I set them, the feeling of ticking them off is fucking amazing at the end of the year.
That's awesome. Dude, so do you do, like, you have that list written down and then you go boom, boom, boom?
Yeah, we do it. Me and Ryan do it every year. And I also set goals in myself, in personal goals, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, what about you? What do you do? Or do you just roll with it?
Yeah, and you know, I think, dude, by the way, very, very inspiring, dude. Really, you know, your success is so like well earned, you know, like how strategic you are, how disciplined you are in terms of goal setting and then achieving these goals. Like, it's very, very impressive to hear, you know, just the way you think about this stuff. And for me, I mean, I think it's been I think I've just needed a lot of time to kind of explore what it is that I need to, what it is that I need to do as an artist to enjoy it. Like, man, that process, I think, was so loose, it was so confusing to me, because for many years I just didn't think about it at all. Like, I just was like making house music, and then got inspired by singing and the stuff. I don't know. I mean, I think my ultimate conclusion is that, like, I like to do a bunch of different things, and that I don't fundamentally, I guess I've been a little bit afraid of choosing just one thing. And that, you know, there's fears that could be associated with, like, well, people like it, you know, or am I good enough to be a singer? You know, like, that, those types of fears are at play. And then with DJing and club music, it's so different, because there was a time where I was like really just like not into DJing or making club music at all. And what I realized,
Why was that?
Dude. Well, I think in part I was inspired by the singing stuff, but also the well of inspiration for production had dwindled because I wasn't refilling it sufficiently. And I think for me in production, it's so different than songwriting, because songwriting is kind of like, it's all about emotion and it's timeless. It's like, you know, we can listen to a song from 100 years ago and, you know, and it'll still make you cry, you know. Production, it's ever changing, and it's just a different side of things. And I think like the most inspiring thing that makes me want to produce is listening to other people's stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And when I discontinued, I didn't realize it, but while I was juggling like the band and like songwriting, I was not digging for new music. It was also a confusing time because the chapter I think about is kind of like when Dirty Bird got exponentially bigger. And so it was like, oh, I just play this house music stuff that I've been playing. And I don't know. I just was, you know, in the past couple of years, as I've opened myself up to more genres of music, more styles, listen to more music, I'll hear more stuff and be like, I want to try making that. And it's an interesting time because I feel like, you know, nowadays, check out like Ben UFO's Boiler Room sets, and it's like 120 to 160. And like, that's, everyone's just playing eclectic shit right now. You know, like everyone's just tossing all this stuff in the blender. I'm talking like, especially like in Europe, you know, labels like Lobster Theremin, Shall Not Fade, Illion Tape, you know, like Illion Tape, just the most recent release is one's like a beat tape that's like J Dilla shit. And the next release is like straightforward techno. And I don't know. It's just like, I don't know, man. I think that's been my problem, is I'm just kind of like, my focus is on having fun, which gives me the best results. So like, how that ends up with a more complex artistic profile. And then how do you work on that? Because I mean, I think, you know, I too have like ambitions to like keep on growing and keep on doing it. But I don't know. I think I've also, you know, I don't know, man. It's just, I could benefit from more concrete goal setting, and it's something that I'm working towards more. So that's why, dude, hearing you talk about this stuff, so inspiring, dude. It's crazy.
I'm always here, man. The thing is I've learned a lot though during this conversation, because we're completely different. Like our approach is so different, and I think it's a great learning for anyone that's listening as well, and anyone out there that's doing anything in life, is that there's no one way to anything. And
definitely.
And it realistically, it's got to work for you, but also I'm fully aware that there's things that I have to be open to change to kind of improve my personal life and my professional life, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And that's like what were you going
to
say?
How do you switch between personal and professional when it comes to being an artist?
Oh, you mean like my inner artist versus my inner manager?
No, like you being an artist and you living a life.
Right. Right, right, right. And being like, hi, I'm a human being who, oops.
yeah, exactly. Because it's so easy for me. Like, it's so easy to just be so caught up in the music world, right? And to then sit back and be like, I do it so often. I'm like, we're just fucking writing house music, or we're just writing music. In the grand scheme of life, this is fucking a blip in the universe. Like, why, Will, stop taking it so fucking seriously. Like, just chill the fuck out and relax, and go and hug your mom or your dad and whatever, go see your friends or whatever. Like, is there anything for you where you're like, okay, this is what I do to kind of divide the worlds?
You know, I mean, I think for me, making lots of different types of music has helped me kind of stay out of the music industry thing, that sort of mindset, because dude, playing as a band, you're like, dude, DJing is a fucking joke. dude, the things that go wrong when you're playing with a band, the technical things, microphone feedback.
Yeah. What's
it's
that?
It's a disaster. It's a disaster. You know, timing, like, you know, DJs have to worry about beat matching, but like, you're never worried about the song just sounding bad when you're playing it. But the band, you're like, this song's awful.
Yeah, when the drummer's just out of time and just like not keeping time, and then your bass can play it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and most of the time it's my fault that things are going wrong. But so I think that adds a breath of fresh air. And then being in a band and then going to producing, it's like, bands, they're doing the same shit that's been being done for like 60 years.
Yeah.
Like, what? You're just doing... You think you're doing something new? It's like, it's like, there's just as, it's like everything that people get serious about in those respective worlds gets flipped upside down for me. And so I think that's been like a very like sort of fun thing where I'm like, DJs need to chill out. Bands need to chill out. It's all just music and none of it matters. But you know, I think, it's gone in ways for me because I think there was a period of time where I had a very intense manager who signed Billie Eilish and is like, he was like the king of making people blow up.
I think I spoke to him before.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Yeah. And dude, he had this plan for me to like do this Golden Voice tour and then do a big set at Coachella. And I was like, dude, I want to learn how to sing and I'm horrible at it. I can't play Coachella. And so, dude, we went our separate ways because I needed to, that was when I made my like home album. I like moved back in with my parents, canceled the big tour, fired people and reset. And I think ever since then, it's been such a valuable journey of like soul searching. And now I think it's kind of there comes a time where I think it's actually you don't want to lose sight of goal setting and like what are we trying to achieve? Because I think, you know, if your motivations are authentic, like for me, dude, my deepest motivation, if I were to pick one, would be to bring people together. Like that's my favorite part about music. Mm. It can bring people together and just we're all dancing and having a good time. And I think that is such a powerful, beautiful things. So that's like my deepest goal, you know? And I'm like,
how often do you forget that?
I mean, I think what I forget more is because see, we're coming at it from opposite places. Like, I forget more to like, what am I doing? I'm like having fun. I'm having so much fun, but like, I got to grow up a little bit also and be like responsible and like move forward through life as well. But I think you can do that without.
Oh, you can. 100%.
You don't have to stop having fun. And so I think that's kind of why I think this conversation is so cool is because I think it's really like, I do think it's the combination that will ultimately yield the best result.
Totally.
And like, well, that's going to be the key to get you to headline Glastonbury, dude, is to like, you know, if you truly, because I think you look at this case study, what you experienced with Dirty Bird, where you felt like you were being put in a box musically, you broke through that box. The only way to do that was ultimately starting your own label because no other label would ever sign these types of cross-genre songs. They've gone on to be some of your biggest records and have like probably changed the game for you.
Yeah.
And it's like that process is you removing all of your barriers and then just having fun, but also juxtaposing that with like strategy. And so, you know, I mean, I think the degree to which fun is possible is crazy because I know you've mentioned to me your interest in like electronica stuff and the Chemical Brothers. And, you know, it's like the limiting beliefs of what's possible for you as an artist. It's like they can manifest in so many different ways. And for you, I think, you know, just it's about the synergy between the 8-year-old child who has the aspirations to dream big and your manager, inner manager. You know, you talk about setting tangible, attainable goals. Well, it's like if Glastonbury's at the top, I mean, you don't shoot straight for that.
No, but you have to work towards it.
Yeah, but it's like each step sequentially could get you there step by step. It potentially, like, who knows? So, but I think. Yeah, man. I mean,
the key is that we both agree on you have to enjoy the journey up to it, because otherwise you're going to get there and be like, well, what's next?
Yeah. Or you're just going to quit because you're going to be like, this sucks now.
Well, there's just nowhere to go. When you put a roof on what you do, when there's a ceiling and you've reached the ceiling, there's no place to go.
Dude, the thing is, I just feel like there's no ceiling, because
you're right, there isn't.
And also, I mean, it just depends on what your actual goals are. Because if your goals are to have fun with making music, which I think is, that is my biggest thing, is like, let's put that at the core and then have everything else work from that. If your goal becomes like, you know what, I want to make like really experimental shit and get my music in a museum or an art gallery.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like the direction you're going can change. And who knows? I mean, like Daft Punk, you know, like I'm sure their shit's in like art galleries and stuff. And
R.I.P.
You know, R.I.P. So who knows? Like, I don't.
They'll be back. Whatever. They haven't toured for fucking years. So come on.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, man, I do think, for me, I really do feel it's this issue of like, okay, so it's taken me like 10 years to figure out that like fun is the most important thing.
It's mad that, isn't it? Because it all started with fun.
Yeah.
Always exactly. Starts with fun. So I, this is a classic saying that I say, is that when you start, before you're in the music industry, it's 90% fun, 10% bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then when you get in the industry, it completely flips, where it's 10% fun and 90% bullshit, until you realize why you fucking started it and what got you there in the first place. And what got you there in the first place was just having fun in the studio.
Exactly, dude. Exactly. You know, it's a beautiful thing, dude. Like, the beginner's mindset, it's the most powerful thing. And I think, you know, another thing I like is like the hero's journey. You know, it's this idea of, you know, you start somewhere, you face challenges and obstacles, you then learn from them, and then you end up back where you started. Totally. So that the process can happen again. And I just think, it's interesting, because when you're a kid and you do not have these preconceived notions of what's possible or impossible, that's when you have the most fun.
Totally.
And then the thing that seemed impossible becomes possible.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, man, I'm going to continue watching your journey, man, because I do feel like I have so much to learn from you in terms of how to like manifest crazy shit, dude.
When I was listening to Rumors, I'm like, oh, this motherfucker, he's done it again. He's releasing something that like is just worlds apart from what you'd expect. And it sounds great. And it's just this, I don't know. And then I'm like, I've got like a bunch of aliases that no one knows about and some that people do know about. And I'm just like holding off, and I'm like, I just should just fucking release it.
Dude, well, here's what I'd love to do, dude. Like, free of charge. Dude, I'd love to hop on another call at some point and dude, just hear your music and just talk about shit that you're grappling with. Because I think, you know, here's the thing. It's like all of your all of your intuition comes from a very well-founded, well-tuned position, because you do have good, like a phenomenal strategic mind. And I am like on the opposite side of the spectrum, where I'm like, do it all, release it all.
Yeah, exactly.
I would be like, yo, why can't you do this? And my guess is that it'd be a conversation where like some things, if I asked you the questions, you might be like, you know what, maybe I can release this. And I would be very curious about the things. Strategy, I feel like so much of it at a certain point is what you do not do, right? I guess. And, or maybe how you do it. So I don't know. I think it would be an interesting conversation because we are on such extremes, like we would probably learn a lot from each other, because I would be like, the success you've achieved is on a whole other tier than what I'm currently at. Like, I'm looking up to you.
But I disagree with that as well. I disagree with that. I would I don't, what is success?
Well, I mean, I think for, like, from a purely like label standpoint, like your label's killing it, dude. Like I'm here trying to take some notes.
Yeah, but it depends what your goals are for the label. Your goal for the label was to bring people together, and you've done that on a much better level to what I have. My label's not a label. I've not signed anyone apart from myself.
Right.
So, and I think this is the thing, is like, and I know you've got to go, but it's like we've both of our goals are completely different.
No, I mean, they're not, because it's like you need both sides to it. Because like for me, it's like the mission is first and foremost, have fun. Whether it's art or the label, it's like fun first. Authentic expression is the same thing as having fun.
Yeah.
Could be like, I need to express my fears, my anxieties, my sadness, my anger, whatever. Let's not judge it. But I like to use the word fun to capture that experience of like expressing yourself.
Yeah.
That's step one. Step two is pass the baton to my inner manager and help get it out into the world. And I do think like, you know, like, there are such amazing artists that I've come in touch with that I genuinely want to help them get their music out into the world. And I think that's where strategy becomes so important. Like how can you get something out there? There's so many ways and there's so much room for creativity on that side of things. But I just think it is not about saying, you know, one is good and one is bad. It's like you need both.
Yeah,
and it's more about how can these things coexist with each
other?
You know, how can you have amazing strategy on a business standpoint without allowing it to interfere with the fun?
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think it's very, very possible. Like, but I just don't know enough about what it means to be truly strategic on your level. And that's where, you know, and that's why we have, that's why like a conversation that's more deep we would like need to reconcile conflicting points of view, because when you are a kid, which is the mindset that I've been, you know, adopting, it's like you cannot even comprehend the limitations.
No.
To achieve goals, you need to understand the limitations to move forward and work within them. But then sometimes you might think there's a ceiling when there isn't. So
going back to what, like the conversation where with my goals is that the limit for me, the limitation to move forward was Dirty Bird. Mm-hmm. And this is no disrespect to Dirty Bird or to Barclay or anything. Like I'd say this to him and whatever, but that was the limitation. I'd reached the limitation. I'm never going to be headlining Dirty Bird Camp Out.
Yeah.
Because Barclay is. Always, no matter, even if I have the biggest record on Dirty Bird, right? Look at Sheba. He's had the biggest record on Dirty Bird. Mm-hmm. He's still not headlining Dirty Bird Camp Out. Mm-hmm. And for me, what I want in my career is I want to be at the top. Mm. And what are the limitations that are holding me back to be at the top? And that was one of them. So I had to change that.
You know, and it's just funny because we could have looked at the same sort of issue from the artistic standpoint, you know, and be like, dude, because I went through the exact same journey that you did.
Yeah.
But with a different mindset. Because and I think it doesn't matter the mindset at a certain point because you just did the damn thing and it worked. You know, like, but it's like, dude, Dirty Bird would have never signed Hallelujah, you know, like, and I think, you know, it's funny because I think, there's times where like, you know, an artist might get pigeonholed as a thing, but if you truly, like, I think this is what I would encourage you to think about just like in the back of your head is like, you know, you're releasing on all these hip labels. You have your own thing. I think now you could release on Dirty Bird people would be like, he's more than that because you are showing yourself. So it's like, you know, I don't know. That's
no, kind of random. You're 100% right. And that is the thing is that I know that I'm at this point where I could if I really wanted to. But again, it goes back to that, well, I'd started a label so I can do what the fuck I want.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. And totally. The same for you. Like I've seen that journey for you. I've seen that journey not start at Dirty Bird, but where our worlds kind of collided together. And then I've seen your journey go from Dirty Bird and kind of go down the more singer-songwriter route and kind of build a community around your fantastic voyage. And I do love what you're doing, man. And it's amazing, like having your workshop and releasing all those people's music. It's just it's beautiful, man. It's great to see. And keep that shit up, because in the grand scheme of things, that's for legacy and giving back to people is so much more rewarding than anything in life.
It is, dude. It is, man. And I think it just goes back to just personal connection, you know. Yeah. Like, always the most meaningful shit, dude. It's crazy, you know. And I think that's what's beautiful about a label. It's honestly, I think the distinction between what I do with these like people who are like students or whatever,
yeah,
it honestly just feels like what the aspiration is with my label, to like really be there for people and to help guide, to help people on their journeys wherever they need the help, you know? I think it just goes back, like, obviously you can tell that I'm fixated on this, but I think there's the journey within and the journey out into the world,
Totally.
And like, I think you need both.
You do. Well, I think
you neglect one.
I think also from what I can kind of gather with what you're doing with your workshops as well, you're seeing that first art. You're seeing yourself in other people.
Absolutely.
You're seeing that first thing. And like, I'm kind of doing some stuff with some people at the moment, and I'm seeing that myself in them at the beginning, on like, oh, we need to get this out. We need to get this out. We need to get blah, 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 blah. And it's so beautiful to see, because you can sit back and just be like, but this is what I did, this is what this person did. But at the end of the day, I love it that you're just having fun.
I have a really specific question for you.
Go for it.
How long have you been sitting on the various songs in your label for them to come out? Because I know Hallelujah was like a long time. What about like Run Run? You know, how much lead up time do you need these days?
Run Run was made. Run Run is the newest record that I'm probably going to be releasing all year. Run Run was started in May last year and finished in November, December. Mm-hmm. But the record that's coming out next, called Place I Belong, that was written 2.5 years ago.
Is that the Needed Pains?
No, that Needed Pains one I wrote in lockdown.
Okay. But your next like self-release single.
Yeah. I'll send you it. What about you?
I don't know, man. I mean, it's just, there's some shit that I make in an hour and then I send it and then it gets signed, really? Or something crazy. That does not happen often to hear back that quickly, but, or I'll self-release it.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes 6 years to get the music right. But I think also, cause I know for you, having heard, you sent me a version of Hallelujah from like a long time ago. And I know that there's aspects of it that like you needed to kind of sort for the release. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, dude, I'm just fascinated by the decision-making process is really what I'm the most excited to, like, if you're down to hop on a call,
dude,
like,
whenever.
And at some point in the future, because
what do you want to know the most? What do you want to know the most?
No, it isn't really anything concrete. It's more so about like, you know, when you get a little bit, you know, strategy, it's like, it always goes down to like, here are the variables at play.
Yeah.
What are we going to do within this context?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like in business school.
Yeah.
I've never gone to business school, like graduate school, but I have friends who are in that world, and it's like the way they teach it is all like anecdotes. It's all like case studies of like, this is a very hyper specific situation.
Yeah.
Here's what the person did. And I think by seeing a bunch of those examples, you kind of can develop your own ideas for your own like frameworks for how to approach a given situation. I think it's just that's like where I think I'm underdeveloped is like, needing a couple more guiding principles to help me with my decision-making process, you know, I think it's really to offset my approach of like chaotically releasing music every week, because I think, you know, it's, it's wild. Like, I feel like you never know what song is going to pop off, but
never know.
It's just so incredible to see someone who takes the exact opposite approach and does it so fucking well. Like, where, you know, I mean, just like the first two singles alone on your label, just like, and it's like, and I feel like in those two, you put out two songs, and in from as a fan, I'm like, Will is, this is a new chapter of Will. Yeah. Like, you have told a new fucking story and a new narrative. And I think that is a powerful component, that the idea of narrative is the point of intersection between business strategy and artistic expression. Because if you know what your story is and you just want to tell it, that's when you are being honest with yourself. Yeah. And that's when people come to the shows and they know what to expect.
Totally.
And I think, and that's when the Spotify curators understand what you're doing and want to support you. That's when the festivals want to buy you. And I think that is my goal. Like, I think it's taken me like 10 years to like of chaotic freedom to be like, okay, now the dust is finally beginning to settle. And I think, like, if we had this conversation 3 months ago, it would have been useless. Because it's a continual process for me, and it's more about figuring how can I establish this narrative in a way that will not put me in a box the year after. Yeah. You know, like, I think I'm.
Let me buy in there. And sorry to cut you off, but
no, I ramble.
I think what it sounds really simple, and it's not. And I'd love to help you with it, man, because for me, it was actually working out what I wanted and then telling the story. Like I physically launched a video telling people what I was trying to achieve.
Yeah.
I did a launch video of the record label talking about why I'm doing what I'm doing.
I loved it. I remember. And yeah. I like it stuck with me about, you know, wanting to be more present and, you know,
that is the whole goal. That's why the record label is called what the record label is. Yeah. And for me, like, and maybe this is kind of this, but it took me so long to work that out. It took me, like, before I was with Ryan, my manager, I was in a management company that was fucking awful and just not listening to what I wanted and kind of putting me in place, putting me on shows where I just didn't want to play and doing all of this stuff. But realistically, and I was so unhappy, but at the end of the day, it was my fault for staying there. It's my fault for allowing, but I had to do that. I had to go through that to get to where I'm at now. And it sounds like at this moment in time, you have to do what you've done to then slowly, like, to let the dust settle, to kind of come out. And but the great thing is, you fucking enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Dude, so I'm here for you, dude. Let's like.
But
you know.
I do now, if you know what I mean. I'm loving it, if you know what I mean. Good. I am loving it. In the grand scheme of things, we have the best fucking lives. Like,
I think we do. We do. We are so lucky. But I think having it be the best life on paper and not be enjoyable is a danger. Is something that we all need to acknowledge. That it's like not a guaranteed thing that you're going to enjoy your success or your privilege of being an artist. Because think about, not to get super dark. Oh, I mean, this is very dark, but the amount of artists who like
kill themselves,
turn to substances to cope with the disconnects, you know, like it is very important to acknowledge like the fragility of like the human psyche and 100%. Human emotions. And I mean, I just think it's like, it's just, it's something that like we can talk about from one artist to another that it's like, you never really understand until you're in the hot seat and you're like, fuck, this sucks.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Culture, you promised me that I would love life once I got the Bentley.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is the question that I kind of had for you earlier was like, how do you change? How do you go from artist to Justin? That's not Justin J. And because I think there's, I do it a lot where I bring my artist life, artist work, artist whatever it is, work at the end of the day, it's what we do for a living, into my personal life. And how does it affect my personal life? Because it's so inclined, if you know what I mean.
See, this once again speaks to our differences in approach, because, you know, I think for me, the aspiration has been to like move further and further into being as fucking honest and as myself as possible, where it's like, where the lines get very, very, very blurry, where it's like, where it's like, there is as little bit of distinction between Justin J, the artist, and Justin, the guy. Yeah. Like, that's my approach. Daft Punk, they are not actual robots. So like, you know, you can, that is like the perfect example of the opposite. And they're probably like my favorite artist. So I don't know, man. It's weird. You know, you don't need to wear a robot mask to have a distinction between work and artist stuff. But if you, I would be pushing you to be like, yo, dude, just be yourself and don't think about it like work. Think about it like there's two human beings inside of you. One who is the artist, who is a kid, and the other who is the manager, who's the adult, who helps the child.
No, because I don't know if I'm kind of putting the question out there enough, like well enough, because this isn't about, okay, let's say for instance, like an artist kills themselves, right? This is somber, this is dark, but there's a point in that artist's career and their personal career, they could be extremely successful, where on paper everyone looks at them going, they're killing it, right? They're doing the best thing. However, their personal life or their artist life is affecting one of other, if you know what I mean. And how do you kind of, like, how do you not let your personal life, because you have a personal life, right? You have your producer life, if you know what I mean. Does it ever go into, does it intercline, or is it, do you just class it as it's your life?
Yeah, I do the dangerous game of just like allow them to be the same. And my personal life is, you know, it's maybe it's a little underdeveloped because of that, but I think, you know, here's the thing. It's like, it might be an issue of scale. Like, who knows? Like, I think the more success you get, perhaps the more, I could see myself becoming more and more guarded about my personal life, potentially. I don't know. It's just, I think that's another variable here that makes it more confusing, because all I know is my perspective in terms of stature.
Yeah.
But when the game, I feel like, consistently evolves the bigger you get in certain ways. And so, yeah, like, I don't know though. I mean, for me, there's just no distinction between the person who people see on Instagram. Totally. The aspiration, for there to be as little bit of a distinction on Instagram versus who I actually am.
Yeah.
You know, but there obviously is, you know, you can choose to, you know, put your best self out on social media, but is that more what you're talking about? Like, how, your question, where does it manifest? Like, are you talking about what's on social media, or paint the picture more tangibly?
No, for me is like, I guess it's not, if you're down about your career, about where you're at in your life, okay, and that doesn't necessarily have to be about your career, but does each, let's say for instance, I don't know, split up with a girlfriend, a boyfriend, whatever situation you're in, right, relationship, does that affect your artist career?
So, you know, I think the ideal situation is that that affects my emotions.
Yeah.
I use my art to express those emotions and reconcile them and then release the music.
Yes.
And then hopefully any emotional turbulence helps my artist career, which definitely was the case for some of my songs. Yeah. Not all my songs are happy. Not all my songs are sad either, but I just think that's the goal. But I mean, yeah, it's, I think that goes down, you know, when I say have fun, I also mean being able to express yourself. And so I think if outside things are weighing upon you, music is the ultimate vehicle to reconcile the shit that makes no sense in your life, whether it's like, I can't believe this girl dumped me, or like, you know, loss, tragedy of any kind. At a certain point, you just can't make sense of some of the stuff that happened.
Totally.
And that's where people turn to religion and music, you know? And I think as an artist, dude, it's like when you are expressing yourself authentically, it's like things might not make sense in your life still, but you at least feel better.
When I'm going through it, I can't write music.
You can't write like techno bangers for sure.
No, I have to be in a mindset to write music, like for me. But what I can do is go back to that emotion when I'm in a better headspace. I can be like, okay, so this was the point in my life, and then kind of bring that emotion into the studio when I'm in a bit of a, like, more of a positive headspace.
Fair enough. Well, you know, I just think this is the importance of not being pigeonholed artistically. This is like the staple of my journey.
Yeah.
I was going through a really tough time and did not want to make club music at all. And the idea of club music was like almost incomprehensible. You know, and it's like, that's why I did not want to become a singer, because I mean, maybe parts of me were like, oh, that could be fun and that could be cool. But when I began doing it, it was because I fucking needed to. I needed an outlet to get the, dude, I was having like panic attacks, anxiety. I was freaking out to the point where I wasn't sure if I had like a neurological thing going, and really I was just stressed out. I was like going to doctors and they're like, you're fine. I'm
like, but you're just
up right now.
You're just in feelings.
Yeah. And they're like, dude, bro, like, get a life coach. And I did. And that helped. I'm making fun of a situation that for me at the time, it was not a good time. And it was very dark and intense. But musical freedom is so important because it can be there for you. If you are truly free musically, then it doesn't matter what you're experiencing and you can channel it. And dude, you know, that could be like ambient music. That could be like, you know, being at the piano or something. I mean, I think, I do think there's certain, you know, like being able to play an instrument even poorly is an important thing for that range of dynamic, because but not necessarily. I mean, you could make drones on your synthesizers on one note and make like some Brian Eno shit like you venting about like lamentation, like that the world is over or whatever, you know.
Man, you just, at the end of the day, you just have to do what works for you, right? And we all have different things that work for us.
But I think it's also a process of exploration to realize what are the farthest reaches of your artistic expression and how they can manifest. Because I think that's something that most people do not fully explore. You know, like, bro, you were not born as a house DJ or a house producer out of womb, you know, you picked up house music, you picked up techno, you picked up other things. You could continue to pick up things. There's no reason why you can't. And I think, but it just takes a little bit of work and a little bit of overcoming fear, because whenever you try something new, you gotta, you know, it's a little bumpy at first, and that's fine, you know. But I think that's my biggest piece of advice is like, are you truly exploring the fullest range of your own artistic output and ability, you know? Like, even if the songs never come out potentially, but they could, because do that one time when you're in a bad day and make a beatless amp. Have you ever made a song with no drums?
Yeah, I'll send you some stuff.
You're into this like sound design, cinematics stuff. So that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. So maybe, you know, we might get specific, but I'd be like, yo, have you ever, here's a question for you. Have you ever sang a song at the piano or the guitar?
No.
You ever tried that?
No.
Well, fuck you, dude. Why not?
Because I'm shit at it.
Why the fuck not?
I'd really love to. I was in a studio session in London, actually, just before Christmas. I'll send you the record that came out of it. And I was like, I'm moving into that point where I want to do shit like that.
Do it.
For me, it's just the process. I have to process it in my head before I do it. And I have to be like, okay, how do I go about doing this? And then I do it.
You know, and it's like, here's the thing. It's like, how good at you, how competent were you at Ableton or like producing a Logic the very first time you opened your computer?
Oh, terrible.
And it's like, yeah, you gotta, it's like, how judgmental were you initially? Like if you're so judgmental that you quit before you give yourself the chance to get good, that might be an issue. But I think the reality is, I don't know, man. I just think if you can do one thing, if you can learn a skill, you can learn another one.
Oh, 100%.
Singing is the fucking hardest thing ever, but there's a way to fucking make it work. And you can always just not sing and be, and like, you could do spoken word poetry, which you already do in your house stuff. Like you already, you know, like you have tons of songs that I assume are your vocals, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So you're already a songwriter, my guy, you know,
but I just think
where I would push you is be like, fuck, if you need forms, because when you say like, I'm in such a state that I cannot make music, I would be like, okay, I'm sure there are situations like that, especially if you have no energy. If you are like, taking music requires energy, but if you are fully, there's a point where if things get really, really bad, like the energy starts coming back in the form of like stress and anxiety. Yeah. And it's like, bro, make some music to get you back, back in the green. And I would say like, dude, just explore shit. Like even if you're, cause my biggest guess, and I could be totally far off, is that you are such a strategic person that you'd be like, I don't have what it takes to be good at this. And that strategy might not be, it might be like, I do not have the time to get good at this thing.
Yeah.
That could be a thing, but you know, where I would say is like, dude, get really fucking creative. Cause you can kind of make anything good. Like, you know, Kanye West, you know, that one of his songs that I did not like until I heard him perform it live a couple of years ago before he was super crazy was that song. What's it called? Like Runaway.
So good.
Dude. And the piano part,
amazing, dude.
A 3-year-old could have written that piano part. Da. It's one note, so quarter good. Note, like you know,
it's such a good record that like I've listened to that so many times on my way to the gym, like dude, that record's beautiful. Love it.
Yeah, man. Dude, well,
we've just done 2.5 hours, mate.
Dude, it went by
it's fucking too fast, flew man. By it's definitely past my bedtime because it's Saturday night and we're DJs that don't DJ anymore and go to bed at like crazier time in the morning.
What time is it?
It's 20 to 11, so 10:39.
You're such a fucking adult. It's ferocious. Bro.
Dude, I've actually been trying to keep up. I've been trying the last week. I've been trying to stay up later because I'm just like I'm so weirded out at this moment in time where like I'm just like, Will, your life has changed so much that, like, in such a short space of time.
And I feel like this, sorry to cut you off, this sums up our shift in perspective. I'm, like, approaching things from the inner child. You're, like, the fucking adult. Like, you have I went to bed at, like, 5 a.m. last night.
Yeah, I saw that on the WhatsApp. I was, like, last seen at 5 a.m. I was like, damn, dude, he's not going to be up.
Yeah, dude, like, and I think, you know, I need to grow up a little bit more and be more responsible.
Maybe we just, like, meet in the middle and we kind
exactly.
of...
Exactly.
And maybe we're the next Daft Punk.
Dude, let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's finish it on that.
I love it.
Before we stop, how can people follow you? How can people listen to you, et cetera, et cetera? All the usual.
Dude, don't follow me. Just keep on following Will Clark. He's got it figured out. At DJ Will Clark on Instagram. But yeah, dude, Dustin J Music, Instagram. I don't use anything else anymore. But
me neither.
Well, I want to say, dude, thank you for taking the time to chat, allowing me to ramble on about all this crazy shit.
Dude, you can come
and
ramble.
I'm very serious. Whenever. Let's keep in touch and do like a little follow-up call once you've recovered from my...
No, dude, I loved this conversation. I was sat on the sofa with my parents watching a film, and I watched the rugby early. England played rugby and we got destroyed by the Welsh. And I don't know if you know the relationship between England and Wales, but we hate each other when it comes to rugby. It was just like, I completely forgot. I text you, that's when I remembered we were talking.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, fuck it, listen, I can't wait for this. And I got on, and it's been a really, really good conversation. I've loved it, man. So thank you so much.
Dude, fuck yeah.
Keep in touch.
As someone who's, I've seen a fair share of your podcast, is like, dude, I hope I can bring the fire, dude.
No, it's been good,
some
man.
Big shoes to fill, dude. It's been good. Patrick Topping and shit.
Yeah, dude. Keep safe, and hopefully see you in a rave soon, man.
Dude, much love, dude. Take it easy, and I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, man.
Peace. Bye.
And that's a wrap. Wow, what an amazing podcast. I absolutely love that. Thank you to Justin for coming on. It was great. If you enjoyed it, please hit the comments below or hit the share button or send it to your mates or whatever. It just keeps the show going. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Have a great week. Whatever you're doing, keep safe. And I'll see you next time on the show.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.